Hello and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 30, and on this week's show we'll be talking about the 1984 film Children of the Corn. But before we get into that, let's go around and see who's with us. My name is Sean, and as usual, my buddy Rob Flack-O'Hara. What's going on, Rob?
Hey man, what's going on? This is spooky because we're watching this horror movies, and we just went camping this weekend. So every time I go camping, I always think about horror movies, but I'm such a weenie, so I never end up wanting to watch them.
Yeah, you're kind of a chicken when it comes to scary stuff, or being out in the dark outside.
I like scary movies. I just don't like camping. But this was a two bedroom cabin with, they had, you know, this is my line in the sand. I could get internet there, and they had a flat screen TV. So that's my kind of camping.
So did you go outside at all?
Well, no, I was supposed to, because at one point my wife went into town to go get stuff for dinner, because that's our whole thing. She wants to cook a fire and cook on the campfire. And so I was supposed to be watching the children, but I didn't. And the children decided that they were going to find every broken bottle that they could and recycle them. So as I was laying on the couch inside the cabin watching TV. And so when I came out, I'm like, what's all this crap? And they had like every beer bottle. They're all broken, dirty, you know, and they're like, oh, we decided we want to recycle, which is, it's hard to get onto your kids when they want to, they're recycling. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Right. And then
it's
so I was
intentions,
like,
intentions, but you're the one who has to deal with it.
Right. Because there's no recycling bin within 50 miles of this place. So then I have to tell them like, oh yeah, this is you've really done a wonderful thing. And let me put it in this recycling bag. And then I walk it down to the trash dumpster. And jump into the trash.
That, well, you know what? That's better than I figured with you. You would probably just like dump them in the woods or something.
Well, here was the thing. For a while, I let it sit on the picnic table. And so we're like eating hot dogs and s'mores, and everything smells like beer, you know, because it's all these beer bottles that other people have left. So, oh well, my kind of camping.
Well, it sounds like it was fun. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you can't wait till the next one.
You know, we got the my wife does Groupon. Do you ever do Groupon? You know what
no.
that is?
I really don't know what it is.
I know what it is.
Yeah, you go on and like the more people that buy something, the price gets cheaper, stuff like that. And so she went on and there was this cabin and it was like $40 and the normal price is like $200. So she's like, I got it, but we have to go tonight. I'm like, oh, okay. I guess we're going camping. So that's usually how I find out. It's like after the plans have been made, then I get let in on it.
Okay. Well, let me ask you. So how many nights did you stay? Just one, right?
We just went one night. Yep.
All right. So what time did you head back home the next morning?
This is actually funny. I don't know. You must have seen this post because a friend of mine online let me know that, I guess an relative of hers was having a Star Wars themed garage sale. And, so the garage sales, you know, started 8 in the morning, and this cabin was actually 2 hours away from where we live. So, about 5:30 in the morning, we started waking everybody up, slapping the kids around a little bit, you know, and, got in the car and drove back for 2 hours. And it was actually a really good garage sale. I got a lot of cool stuff, but, then everybody was mad at me all day because we left early. But I mean, really, there's only so many things. It was too cold to go swimming. So it's like just sitting outside is not really that exciting for me.
Well, and they already cleaned up the camp.
Right. Yeah. So there's no broken glass for them to trip on. So.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I saw your post on your website.
I know, I felt bad too because, I mean, as you know, I got a pretty big Star Wars collection. So that, you know, there's only certain things I need. So what's a good example? It's like if you go and they have R2-D2 and C-3PO, you know, but I only need R2-D2. So it's like I buy that one and the guy's looking at me like, you know, you're kind of breaking up the set. like you feel kind of obligated to buy them both, but I'm like, I already got the easy one. I'm just looking for the other one, you know, but anyway, too bad for him.
And you got a cool Ewok phone.
I did. I don't, I guess it's just a kid's toy. I've tried repeated calls to the Ewok village and nobody's returning my calls. So I just get the yub yub message. And, so I don't know.
That's funny. Well, everyone should go check out that post. It was pretty good. Good stuff on there. And also joining us for the second time, she did the Halloween episode, which I'm not sure what episode was that, 20 or
21.
21. And from MealyMonsterland.com, my wife, Nicole.
Hello.
Hi, Nicole. I'm staring at her and it's kind of weird. Hey.
It is weird.
What's going on?
Not much. Just here to talk about Children of the Corn.
That's right. So whenever we do, so I've said it before, like I'm not a big fan of horror films. I really don't like them. I never did. I didn't like them as a kid. So we don't do them that much, but when we do, we'll try and get Nicole on here to record with us. And your art season's coming up. So it was kind of like, if I'm going to get you back out for another show, we have to do it now because in about another month, she'll be in the studio full time.
That's right.
You just had a show this weekend, right?
I did in Utica, New York. It was interesting.
Yeah. I saw the pictures on Facebook. I love looking at all the little things that you have for sale and stuff. And you had said something about people like haggling over prices or whatever. I'm afraid. I never do that. Like, this is the only tactic I have is like, I'll go to not a thrift store, but like an antique mall or something, you know? Right. And then I do the same thing every time. It'll be like $20. And I'm like, I only have 12 in my pocket. Will you take that? And then they always go, no. And then I give them 20. So not only do I pay full price, but they know I'm full of crap too.
That's right.
Yeah. Here comes that guy again.
But I mean, these are all things that you make.
Right. I think, people forget that they're not made in China. And
yeah. So it's almost like, I mean, you know, like if you're selling something, like if I'm trying to sell something on Craigslist and somebody offers me lower, then to me, they're saying you're trying to charge too much money for this item. But when it's something you've made, it's like they're saying, well, it's not worth that or so. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird.
Right. It is, but it comes with the job. I'm used to it, but when it's a really slow show like that one was, it ticks me off.
Yeah. I remember when I was a little kid. I mean, I was probably 12 or something like that. And we had a garage sale at my dad's house and I had this giant tub of Hot Wheel cars. And I wasn't a big Hot Wheel car, but I think when you're a kid and you grew up in the 80s, everybody had Hot Wheel cars, you know. And I remember, I think I had put like a quarter each or something. I mean, not an exorbitant price. And, this lady came up and she was like, well, I'll give you a nickel each or I'll pay you, you know, $3 for this whole tub. And I had no idea what to say, you know, and then I asked my mom and then she's like, starts yelling at the lady or whatever. Cause it was like, she's trying to take advantage of a kid, you know?
Yeah.
But I was
not like she was.
She was. Yeah.
Exactly. But I'm not good at haggling.
Yeah. I'm not, neither Nicole or I are either. I mean, if we go buy a car, it's just, We kind of just go in there and be like, all right, we'll pay this. Well, I mean, we'll talk about it beforehand. Like, we'll be like, this is what we need to get. And this, blah, blah, blah. And then they're like, all right, we'll give you this much for your car. And I'm like, shit. Right.
And we go, okay.
Yeah. My dad absolutely loves it, which is funny because we're so opposite. You know, I remember one time we went to go buy this car and it was like, I think this is probably like the late 80s, maybe 1990, and he was buying a Chevy truck and the ad said under $10,000. And when we got there, it was like 9995, you know? And, then the salesman was like, well, you know, did you want a bumper? And they didn't include, like, the rear bumper was a separate thing. And my dad's like, okay, that's it. We're leaving, you know? And then the guy's like, okay, I'll throw in the bumper, but you got to give me this. And he'll just sit there. He loves it, you know? And I remember at one point they were haggling because they had, tinted this truck and it was like a $50 charge. And, my dad worked in the printing industry. So he always had Sharpie markers and he always had tape and he always had razor blades because they would always cut the paper and stuff, you know? And so my dad gets up and the guy's like, well, don't leave. And he's like, no, I'm going to go get razor blades. I'm going to scrape that tin off. And, you know, I mean, he loves to antagonize him. And me, when I go in, I must have it written on my face. You know, I mean, they'll be like, oh, well, we're going to charge him more for the air. You want the tires aired up? That's another $50. And I'm like, okay. You know? I'm terrible at it. I hate it.
Yeah. It's uncomfortable. Yeah. It, you know, and my father's the same way. He, and then we'll get on to this, but you know, when we used to go, when I was a kid, my stepmother and I, we and my father, we'd go to get a real Christmas tree. And we would walk around, you know, which one do you like? We'd finally pick one out. And then that's when my stepmother and I would learn to just kind of duck back a little bit, because then that's when dad started haggling with the guy about, you know, the price of the Christmas tree. Cause I mean, they're always overpriced anyways. I mean, you use them for a couple of weeks and they're always way overpriced, but you know, I would probably just pay the money and go home with it. But he would always haggle with it. And then it would turn into just like in a Christmas story, you know, all right, well, can you wrap it up or tie it or whatever?
Right. So, see, my dad would probably wait till the 24th, you know, and then be like, all right, you know, you're going to have to throw these away. You should pay me to haul one off.
And a lot of places, there's a place around here that did that where they just basically, you could come and get a free tree.
Yeah.
So it was either people couldn't afford them or people that were just too cheap to,
right.
They like getting something free.
So let me ask you this, Sean. Have you ever haggled over the price of corn?
I have not.
Never?
But I am a fan of corn, but I'm not a fan of cornfields.
Oh, and what about children? Children of corn.
Children? I don't know. Depends. Sometimes yes, sometimes they can be a pain. But yeah, why don't you give us our summary, Rob's summary of Children of the Corn, just in case hasn't seen it.
Right. So this movie stars Bert and Vicky, who while driving through in Nebraska, they accidentally hit and kill a child who has wandered into the road. And while seeking assistance in the nearby town of Gatlin, the couple find more than they bargained for when they run into a cult of children who believe that everyone over the age of 18 should die. Will the couple be able to escape Gatlin before it's too late? Find out in this 1984 Stephen King classic, Children of the Corn.
Ooh.
It's creepy.
It is creepy. Yeah. So I think I did mention on our Halloween episode that this was probably the one movie that just really kind of creeped the crap out of me as a kid. And a lot of it was because of the music,
mm-hmm.
which Nicole would always kind of antagonize me with.
I would always try to sing it, but I would never get it right.
Is it still on your phone?
It is. It's my ringtone.
That's great.
I think it's very obnoxious when we're out and it goes off. I think she should change it. But yeah, so this was based off of Stephen King's short story, which was published in 1977 in Penthouse. But then they put it in, it was a collection of short stories, right? Night Shift?
Correct.
Now, I didn't read it, but Nicole, did you read that?
I think so.
Yeah, I've read it. My parents were big... they're big readers, of course, and they were big, into horror, like short story, or not short stories, like paperbacks, you know. So I remember reading this, and actually, I just went back I actually found it online and kind of skimmed through it. And it's amazing that there's some pretty big differences between the paperback version and the movie.
Yeah, I agree. There's some huge differences, actually.
Yeah. Like pretty much everybody in the book dies.
Yeah.
Spoiler. No, we don't do spoilers on the show because all this stuff, it's like, if you haven't seen it or you know, sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, cause Nicole had found it online. I wanted to, but I just didn't have time to find it. Cause I did want to either hear the audio version of it or read it. I didn't get to, but I did look it up and I kind of got like a compressed version of what happened in the short story. I wish some of it would have been, you know, portrayed in the movie. And then some, I guess, in the movie I kind of like. So it's kind of a give and take. But yeah, like you said, everyone dies, which is pretty cool because, you know, normally the movies, as we see in this one, you know, Vicky and Bert go and live happily ever after.
Right.
Which isn't the case in the short story. I mean, you find out that she gets her eyes dug out.
She gets put up on the corn cross and then they put corn silk in her eyes and in her mouth and she's dead. And then Bert gets taken by the person who walks behind the rose or whatever it is.
He who walks behind the rose.
Which yes.
I've told you both. I hate that whole, like they did. I wish they would have just had like a shorter name.
Like Bill.
Yeah. Bill. Chuck.
All hail Bill.
Yeah. Something like that. I don't know. It just was a little too long for me.
It's dramatic, Sean.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, they should have abbreviated like HW, like what the kids do on the phones, right? HWWBTR. Yeah. Here comes HWWBTR.
Yeah. Oh, no. Hashtag.
Hashtag corn.
Yeah. But, okay. So let's go through some of the characters or the actors that were in this movie before we get into it. We have Linda Hamilton, as everyone knows from Terminator. She was Sarah Connor. Beauty and the Beast show, which I will admit I watched a little bit with my mother when I was younger.
Last week, yes.
And she also, I don't have it in my notes here, but I think it was, I want to say season 2, episode 21, but I'm not sure. Not that anyone's going to really care, but Murder, She Wrote. She was on Murder, She Wrote. So I was happy with that. I had it in my notes, but I don't remember. It's not here.
Do you remember what year Terminator was? Is it the same year as this? 84?
The
original Terminator? I think it is. What struck me in this film is what two different characters. I mean, Sarah Connor, well, of course, in the original Terminator, she's kind of wimpy, you know, she just runs around a lot. But I mean, by the time in Terminator 2, she's all muscular and she's like, you know, trained with weapons and she's kind of a badass in Terminator 2. And then in this, she's just like, you know, following Bert around. Come on, let's go. You know, and
Nicole, what did you say she was? She was like,
she was really looking for commitment.
Commitment, and she you said like, she's really needy or something.
And she was really needy. Like every like thing she said was like, let's get married, basically, but in like undertones.
Yeah. She kept hitting around at it.
Yeah, I found her character to be quite annoying, which I'm sure probably most people did in this film.
I know, it's always annoying in a horror film when you're rooting for one of the main people to get killed. I would have loved to have seen a corn husk in the eye with this chick.
Yeah. And then she would say stupid stuff like, where are we, when they're driving in a cornfield? Like he would know where they were. Where are we, Bert?
Right. Right. We're half past corn husk row or something. Yeah. And there was a lot of, you know, I think you see this a lot of times, especially when something's been adapted from a short story, but they really have to fill that time, you know, and so there was a lot of stuff in this movie that, I don't know, just, I felt like it was just in there just to make it longer, you know?
Yeah.
I agree. Also we have,
like our shows.
we had, Peter Horton as Bert. I think he's a producer on, or was a producer on Grey's Anatomy. I don't even know if that show's still on. But what I recognized him from, and I don't think I really watched it, was 30 something.
I used to watch 30 something.
You did?
Yeah.
So
he was on it. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
No, he was. I looked it up. I probably caught a little bit of an episode, here or there, but it wasn't like Beauty and the Beast.
Man, he looked super familiar to me. And then when I went through IMDb and just nothing rang a bell to me.
I mean, we've run into this with other shows, with other movies and other actors where you go, God, man, they look so familiar. And you go down their list or IMDb list and there's a ton of stuff on there. But a lot of it is a cameo here on this show and maybe a little part in this movie, like a ton of work. But yeah, as far as really, really recognizing him for anything, it was 30 something and this really. Mm-hmm. And we had John Franklin, who plays the creepy Isaac. That look he does, that gaze in the beginning of the movie where he looks over the diner, like the half curtains in the diner, and gives him a little nod to proceed with the purging of the adults in the town, in the diner. That dude, they definitely scored with him. He was definitely a good pick.
Yeah. I looked him up on IMDb, and the only other thing that I recognized him, I mean, you would never recognize him, but it said that in the two Addams Family movies, he played Cousin It. But I think Cousin It, that's just like the big hairball thing,
hairball,
right?
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah,
you wouldn't recognize him. And it did say that he has GHD, which is a growth hormone deficiency. So in this movie, you know, he is obviously one of the children, right? And he's obviously less than 18 years old, because that's a what age that they kill the children off. And how old do you think Bert and Vicky are supposed to be in this movie?
I would say early 20s.
Yeah, early mid 20s.
Mid-20s,
maybe,
or late
20s. Yeah. Isaac, or John Franklin, is 3 years younger than Linda Hamilton in this movie. Well, I mean, in real life. But,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, I was completely surprised by that. But because of, I guess, this growth hormone deficiency, and actually it says that he's been hired to play a lot of, like, younger-type roles or whatever because he has a, you know, kind of a kid voice or whatever, but... Yeah, he was like, let's see, it said he was born in 59, and this is 84, so yeah, he's a lot older than you would think.
I read that he's just, either just under or barely makes 5 foot, so.
Yeah.
And yeah, he does, you know, his voice is a little higher. He, perfect. He was absolutely perfect for this part. We also have Courtney Gaines, who plays Malachi, another great pick for this part in this movie. You'll know him. He has a small part in Back to the Future, where he's dancing with Lorraine and pushes George down. Can't Buy Me Love. Colors, I'm really not really sure. I've seen Colors. I can't place what character he was in.
I love that. He's the guy near the end where remember the whole gang, they're all hanging out, and then the helicopter like does the rain, and he's like, "You want me, SA or whatever?" And then he gets shot.
God, I don't remember.
Yeah, he's like the guy that gets killed or whatever in the raid. I mean, it's funny too because he has so many different. I mean, it's. For me, his role in Malachi is all about the hair. You know, he's got that sweet, long kind of feathered hair. Yeah. And then
the 80s hair.
Yes. I know. Oh, yeah.
So he like corn silk.
And then in Back to the Future, I think he has a buzz cut, right?
Something, a crew cut or something.
In Colors, I think he's got a stupid bandana.
I'm sure he does. Yeah. I don't know what color it was. Yeah. I would say blue just because I have a contrast with the color of his hair.
I think so. And then it said he's in The Burbs, so this is another one of our repeat actors coming back. Nicole, what'd you think about specifically these two actors?
I really liked them for the part, but Isaac was perfect. He's super creepy, and he looks like a, I don't know, he's just perfect for the role. The big hat and the menacing look, and then Malachi... He just talked too much.
Well, that was the thing too. Malachi was like the one everyone feared. He was the badass.
He's like the enforcer. Yeah.
Yeah, but really, all he did, I mean,
he killed would a lot of everybody. People.
He would tell everyone to get someone, and then you know he wouldn't really chase people down. He's just like, get him.
He's like the play caller. Yeah, he's the play caller. He's the sinner.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was definitely a good choice. We have the two young ones, Sarah and Job. And then what is the other kid's name?
Joseph
that dies. So they're the young ones. We only see Joseph briefly, but, Sarah and Job, I mean, they're really the only kids in the town that aren't buying into Isaac's crap. You know, they're just kind of trying to live themselves, and they're real young.
Yeah. They're just little kids. And I don't know. I was kind of confused. I mean, what we find out is that Sarah has the gift of, I think they say the gift of sight or whatever, but she can like has these premonitions. And I mean, this is for me, and I wrote this later on in some of the scenes that I want to talk about, but there is nothing creepier to me than little kids like crayon drawings of people getting stabbed and stuff. And I've seen it in a few movies. I'm trying to think. I think in The Ring, where he keeps making these disturbed drawings, but, oh my gosh. I mean, she's like drawing these little, you know, they're stick people and they're all carrying around machetes and stuff
with happy faces.
Yeah. Yeah. God, it's just creepy. And you know, what's even creepier to me than this in the movie is that while I was watching that, I was like, do you think some adult drew those for the movie? And like tried to make it because I mean, they look like a kid's drawing or they just gave some 8-year-old some crayons and they're like, listen, I want you to draw, you know, some people stabbing each other. Just that bothered me. I don't know. You guys have kids. Would you let your kids be in a movie like this where they're going to be stabbing people or whatever?
Not this one because I'm sure they didn't make any money.
That's true.
It depends on how much money they would make.
We want to buy a new house. So it's like, listen, our two sons share a room. You want your own bedroom?
Right. You're like, listen, it's $200 per painting.
Yeah.
$400 for a stab. Yeah. I give a whole price list or whatever.
So we have the town, and this is what I wasn't clear with when I was a kid, that when the town of Gatlin, is a corn town, but they're having like a drought and the corn is not doing well. And from what I gather from reading the little synopsis of the book is that these kids start, worshiping he who walks behind the row, to get the crops to flourish and everything, and they end up having to kill anybody over 19. So they systematically just kill everybody at once. Everybody in the town dies at once that is over 19. And then so then it's supposed to be when Vicky and Bert are on their road trip to, I don't even know, California, I believe.
The movie, he had just finished medical school. And in the book, it's just they're a bickering married couple.
Right.
And they're trying to save their marriage. But in the movie, they're happy.
Yeah. So it kind of does a little cut back and forth. And that's where Joseph, he's going to split town because he doesn't buy into Isaac's stuff. And this is one of the scenes that Nicole and I were laughing at because he's like, okay, make sure that nobody's looking, no one's around. He's going to cut through the through the cornfield. And so they go to each side of a barn, excuse me. And then they're like yelling, it's all clear, like there's nobody's looking.
Nobody's looking.
And so he takes off. And of course, someone obviously was looking. We find out that it's Malachi.
Or they heard him.
Yeah, or they heard him or something.
Right, they heard him yelling, yeah.
Because there does seem to be kids everywhere in this town. There just seems to be kids like all over this town waiting to like keep an eye on something. So this kid's Joseph's taking a run for it. He's going to cut through the cornfields, probably go, I don't remember the name of the next town, which is like 19 miles away. I'm assuming he's going to go there and he's going to get help and come back for these guys. He ends up getting his throat cut by Malachi in the cornfield. The cornfield opens up and the cornfield talks. So the cornfield is like a lie from, you know, he who walks behind the row, you hear like talk, like kind of reminds me of like Lost, the whispers, if anyone's familiar with that, where you hear kind of giggling and talking. And then the cornfield starts opening up and he trips. And as he's getting up, that's when he gets hacked by Malachi.
Wouldn't you think the kid would know that the corn talks if he's lived there for 3 years with no adults and that it knows what's going on? Like,
yeah, you would think so.
Right? Because it like moves itself, it opens up, it makes walkways. You would know that, and then you wouldn't
go through
the cornfield
right,
to
maybe
leave.
Go around it or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, was that I couldn't figure out if what they were implying was that it was like a supernatural thing and that they were being driven around and they couldn't escape it, or if literally the road signs were just put up to be confusing.
Yeah, well, you know what? Like the other thing that I read in the little cover of the book was that in the film. Okay, so well, let's just say first that Joseph gets basically killed or his throat cut by Malachi because he's leaving, so that's not allowed. And then as Vicky and Bert are driving through the countryside, they are not looking, paying attention, looking at the map, and they look up, and of course, there he is holding his throat, and boom, they smash and hit him. And Bert finds out when he inspects him, because he's a doctor, that he's had his throat cut.
Well, he says he was already dead when he walked out. How can he already be dead if he's walking? That's what I want to know. He was already dead. Blood, he was talking about blood does something in 4 minutes.
Yeah,
in 4 minutes, and he was already dead.
Well,
but he can't walk himself out if he's already dead. And he wasn't. He was holding his throat, and he had like a panic look on his face when they hit him.
Yeah. Well, he was, yeah, so he said he was murdered or whatever. But, and then in the difference between the book and with the movie is there's an old guy who works at like an old gas station garage, but of course it has a sign for no gas. And so going back to the signs maybe being supernatural, in the book, it says that this guy that works at the garage has an agreement with those kids that he's obviously over 19. He's allowed to live, but he has to direct anybody over 19, any adults that are driving around into Gatlin to be sacrificed. So they didn't do it that way in this book or in the movie, because in the movie, he's kind of telling them, dude, just don't bother with Gatlin. They're too into religion. Go to the next town. So then I think maybe the kids turn the signs or something, so they have to go in a circle.
Yeah, it's not really clear in the movie, or at least it wasn't to me, like why he's allowed to be there, you know. And
that's what I'm saying. I think that was kind of a fail from the book to the transitioning to the movie, because when I read that, I was like, well, that makes sense. It's kind of like an agreement, like we're gonna let this one dude live who's kind of on the outskirts maybe of Gatlin, but he's gonna direct any traffic here, and then that's going to be a human sacrifice for the cornfield gods.
But in the movie, it's opposite. They want him to direct people out of the town.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. So when Rob said, was it supernatural that the signs would keep Kevin going in circles?
Yeah, like maybe he who walks behind the rose wants the blood sacrifice.
Right. I guess my point is I don't understand why they would have done that. They kind of changed something, but then recovered it in the signs. Why not just have the guy direct him into the town? I guess because they wanted to make it, they wanted to kill him, because the old man at the gas station does get killed by him because they think maybe he gave him information, possibly.
I think Malachi just likes to kill people.
Yeah. That's one of those things I thought worked better in the book. Let the guy direct him and then just kind of forget about that character.
Yeah, it was like they changed it for no reason and made it worse.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. All you get out of it really is that the suspenseful, you know, type of scene where he's going to walk around and there's going to be a little jumpy type scares or whatever, but it, I don't know. It was just confusing, I thought.
So when they do hit Joseph with the car and he checks him out, and it's because he's a doctor, he sees that he was had his throat cut and he was murdered, and he kind of looks in towards the cornfield and he finds a suitcase, which that was one of those things, Nicole and I noticed, that when they had the suitcase in the car and they kind of look at it later, it was like pretty much saturated with blood, right?
In the cornfield, it had blood all over it, and then in the car, it had hardly any blood on it. Right. I don't even know if there was blood on it.
I don't know.
Yeah, it was hard to tell. And we were watching it on Netflix in HD, but it was still kind of hard to tell if it was blood that was dripping down sides when it was in the car, if it was just the...
Maybe they cleaned it.
He who wipes up the evidence.
Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of... on IMDb, a continuity errors in this movie.
Yeah.
And this is basically one of them after he, so when Bert checks him, you know, he like goes out there. Well, first, let me just say, I would not have noticed probably any of them except for possibly this one without reading them on IMDb. So even though there's a lot of little things in this movie, you have to really be looking for them. And I kind of learned that today when I rewatched the movie at work. But as he goes and checks the kid, he's on his stomach, correct? When he first goes over to him in the street. And he's checking him and he goes, oh man, he rolls him over to check him. That's when he notices his throat was cut. And then Vicky comes up, asks if he's dead. And of course, she gets upset and he's hugging her and tells her to go back to the car. He needs to look. And as he turns around, the kid is back on his stomach again. So that's one of the continuity errors, is he was on his stomach. He flipped him over. And then when he goes back to him, he's back on his stomach again.
Yeah, and I was distracted in that scene. I don't remember if I noticed that or not, but really, all I kept thinking was, that kid looks pretty good for being hit by a car.
Yeah, he only looked like he had his throat slit.
Right, yeah. I mean, his arms and legs are still attached, and...
You know, that's when we have the, like, kind of the go-around. They're going to go to the further town, because the guy tells them not to go to Gatlin, basically, but they have to, because like you said... The signs keep pointing every way they turn. It's kind of got them going in the circle.
Oh, okay. So you skipped over one part. Because he's a doctor and he wants to do the right thing, he has now put this child in his trunk.
Yeah.
So the whole rest of this movie, every time I see the car, I'm like, there's a stiff in the trunk.
With his golf clubs.
That's right.
Yeah,
yes.
With his golf clubs. Yeah, so, you know, we have the whole part of them trying to get to the next town, and they somehow get, I don't even remember how they got in the cornfield. They're driving in the cornfield, right?
What a bad idea. I mean, you know what, just from, I'm not even from horror movie standards, just from, you know, normal automotive care. I don't feel like we should be driving through cornfields. And it literally is like rows of corn. You know, you can see where it is. And then, but they're treating it like roads, like, well, hang a left at this corn or whatever. I know you put this down as one of your favorite scenes or whatever. It's so ridiculous. I think Stephen King, I mean, people have said this for years, that a lot of what Stephen King writes is scary when you read it. But it doesn't always transfer well to film. So, I mean, I'm sure in the book, it's terrifying that they are driving through a cornfield and they can't see where they're going or whatever. But in the film, it looks just kind of silly.
I feel like it was one of those filler scenes. Like they just did it, like 4 minutes of driving around just to take up some time.
Right. Because here's the thing. If you want to get out of a cornfield, put it in reverse and go out the way you just came.
And then right. Vicky's going, where are we? We're in a cornfield.
Like, what's the answer to that?
I don't know, Vicky.
They stop. They like suddenly stop and they hear a thud. And that's like one of those scenes. Cause Nicole and I were kind of giggling through the movie with the stupid stuff was she's like, well, what was that? And he's like, well, it's probably my golf bag, you know? And she's like, are you sure? Or something like
it's probably the dead boy in the trunk.
Yeah. I mean, you just drove like a maniac and came to a complete stop. Of course it's going to thump in there. And she asks him as they're driving through the cornfield, just tell me where we are. And Nicole's just like, what the heck? Like that's when I think you point out, like, she's just really needy and just, I don't know.
She's just a little ridiculous. Maybe it was just her way of panicking. I don't know, but. Yeah, it was kind of goofy.
He doesn't know. There's no GPS. There's no cell phone. Because like you said, Rob, before the show or in your notes, like if this all could have been avoided with a cell phone.
Right. Right. You call somebody and it's over. But, you know, I have actually my wife and I both have relatively new cars, like a couple of, you know, hers is a couple of years old. Mine's about a year old. And I freak out if the kids get in my car with mud on their shoes or something. I'm like, don't touch anything. Don't, you know, cause I'm going to have to clean it. I can't imagine putting a child that I've just run over with a slit throat in my trunk. That is never coming out of the carpet. And then driving through a cornfield. That is permanent. You are decreasing the value of your car, sir. That's all I thought.
And it was almost like that. I mean, it didn't faze him anymore.
Right.
You're like, we got to get help. Something's not right here. Which he keeps saying when they actually get into Gatlin, you know, they keep saying something's not right. Okay. So something's not right. They pull into this town and they're in like the main street downtown area. There is nobody to be found. Nothing is open, but they keep kind of investigating.
Keep looking.
Right. So one thing I wanted to mention, and this is like a creepy kind of memory I had when I was a kid, is one time I went over to my neighbor's house and I knocked on the door and I heard him say, come in. And so I went inside and then I couldn't find him. And it turns out he was like in his sister's bedroom. So I walk in the house and he's the only one there. And I was, I don't know, 11, 12, something like that. But I just had this memory of walking into someone's house and no one being there and, you know, not my house. And it was really kind of a scary, you know, kind of creepy thing. And I'm like yelling for my buddy, you know, and then eventually he yelled out and I was like, oh, he's in a different room. But, these people, Vicky and Bert are perfectly content to stop in a ghost town to keep repeating the phrase, something is very wrong here. And then walking into places like people's houses. And they're like, oh, well, maybe there's a phone. Of course, this becomes a subplot is that they're trying to find a phone. And I guess they're trying to find a phone so they can call 911 or whoever because they've run over a kid and they're driving him around in cornfields now.
I don't think there was 911 yet, was there?
Actually, probably not. So
84,
I don't.
Yeah, 84. I don't know.
So I don't know who they're going to call.
Hey, and then they see all the phones are cut, but then they keep wandering around looking for a phone. Wouldn't that clue you in? Like, let's go.
Right. You see that one time and I'm like, we're out. we're out like Lander. And so, let's see. Some of the other scenes I put down the one of the opening scenes, and I think we're way past spoiler land here, is like what you mentioned, when Isaac basically gives his little nod, which is definitely a creepy moment in the film, and all the kids go into the local diner where everybody is sitting around, and they basically kill everybody. Do you think you could not fight off some 12-year-olds?
This is what I'm going to give. I'm going to give him the element of surprise. We'll give him that. But
that's true.
But the problem I think Nicole and I had when we were watching that is, why do three kids have to purposely put the hand or knuckle of the diner operator in the meat slicer? Like, right. I can see they're going to kill him, but yet they want to.
That's just torture.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's no sense in the meat slicer bit. Yeah. I agree with you there.
That was just 80s. You know, horror gore flick, you know, that kind of stuff. That was unneeded.
Yeah. So, like,
plus, I think two of the old ladies, we thought maybe they put like cyanide in the coffee.
Or arsenic or something in their coffee.
And it's funny too, because if you watch that scene, you see the girl pouring it in after, you know, Isaac gives his nod, she pours it in there and starts, and then they pour the coffee, and within like 2 seconds, an old lady's like, ooh, that's good coffee. And then like 2 seconds later, the lady across from her is grabbing her throat. And then so is the other one. Like, you tell me that you couldn't taste it.
Yeah. And that's fast acting stuff right there.
It is.
Let's see, what else bothered me? Like you mentioned, you know, I thought this is definitely a movie that doesn't work today because of the whole cell phone aspect. I mean, when they're basically driving around looking for pay phones and for other phones.
Well, it could work if they were on, you know, like Sprint or something. You know, they don't get service.
Right. He who does not get one bar.
They'd be like, oh my God.
In the corn, right.
Yeah, I'm getting no signal. Beep, 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 or something like that. I'm sure they can work around
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Someone had to have Wi-Fi.
Yeah. There's also one thing I mentioned, that there's a lot of scenes where Bert and Vicky are running away from the kids. And, you know, like Nicole mentioned, where Malachi's basically saying, you go here, you cut them off, you go here, you know. And I thought, good luck. I mean, you know, maybe they're both in great physical shape, but I know that I could not outrun – you know, a group of 13-year-olds. And 13-year-olds run for fun. You know, I mean, my kids run for no reason. They're just out there running all the time. I thought, if I'm getting run down by a group of kids, I'm just going to lay down and I'll just stick my own head in the meat slicer.
You only have to run faster than Susan.
That's true. That's true. I'd be back in the car. I think that's the safest spot. What else? Sarah. And, is it Job?
Yeah. Her Job, little brother. Yeah.
Right. You know, so they're the ones that you said, you know, they've basically split off from all the other kids. And, Isaac leaves them alone because she has the gift of sight. And so at one point they decide they're going to save Bert, you know, and so they go, hey, come here to our secret hiding spot. Nobody knows about it. And it's a storm cellar. I mean, it's like two giant doors that open up.
That's exactly what I said last night when we were watching. I'm like, oh yeah, right. Nobody else noticed that.
Right. It's not like it's the frickin' Bat Cave with a, you know.
it is the Bat Cave.
they did have, it seemed to, when they went down to into the cellar, it seemed like they had like a secret room though. Cause I think Job mentions this was for the first day of the fallout or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, cause this is like during the Cold War era. And, you know, so they have all these supplies in their food, jarred food and stuff like that. And that's when, you know, Bert was getting chased because, well, when they go to the house too, and he leaves Sarah at the house because he wants to go back into town. He wants to go back to City Hall, I think it was.
Something's wrong here, but they keep splitting up. It doesn't make any sense.
You don't do that. I mean, I guess you do that in 80s flicks or horror flicks or even just a horror flick. I don't know. I don't watch them that often, but it seems like that's kind of a way you go where you split up all the time. And he goes into town and she stays at this house after they come upon Sarah in the house, and he's been chased and stabbed. And like you said, Job.
Yeah. But before that, when he's searching the town, he sees all this weird stuff, like weird corn crosses, corn everywhere. And he doesn't realize that maybe he should be frightened until he finds a dragon blowing fire on a blonde girl in a cornfield. That is the clue. It brings it all together that, you know what? I got to get back to Vicky, and then he drops it and he runs, and then everything goes to crap. So apparently he's thinking at this point, there is a dragon in the cornfield.
Which is a whole different movie. And I would watch that movie too. I mean, that sounds okay.
Yeah, I think I would maybe prefer that. Yeah, because, you know, we're watching it and Nicole's like, all right, he's in the police station and there's corn stalks through there. There's no police
there's
there.
There's like a Jesus corn portrait.
Yeah, there was a portrait of Jesus. At least it looked like a portrait of Jesus on the wall, but they had painted him to look like
corn
Grover.
Teeth. Yeah.
He was blue. And then we started laughing because it's like you said, like the whole movie, Bert is like, man, something's just not right. Something's not right. He's like, holy shit, there's a dragon.
A dragon with fire.
That's what it is. And then he realizes that he's probably got to get out of there.
You know, I always do a certain amount of suspension of belief when I watch horror movies because you have to do, I mean, obviously they have to do some stupid things or nobody's going to get killed, right? But when you're in a town and you can't find anybody and something's obviously wrong and then you're like, whoa, 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 I saw somebody in that house. Let's go check it out. I'm like, I hope you get stabbed. I mean, because you deserve the first stabbing. And then they go in there and they're like, I heard a noise upstairs. Let's go up there. And you're in a stranger's house in a town that has pictures of Jesus with corn teeth. This is not, this is not a place where you want to just go wandering around. And then he goes upstairs and they do eventually find the kid. And then, like you said, he says, why does he decide he's going to City Hall? Has he just come up with that idea?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, out of the blue, he's like, maybe I'll go to City Hall. And then he goes, you know what? This is the creepiest town I've ever been in. I'll go on foot. I'll just go.
And I'll leave Vicky behind.
Doesn't he tell her if something happens, get in the car and then beep or something like that?
Yeah. Right.
Because that happens in the book, I believe. She starts beeping the horn at one point. And that's when he finds all the kids around the car or something.
And this is what he should say. If anything creepier happens than this girl that won't talk to you, who's drawing pictures of you being stabbed, get in the car and honk. Because, I mean, we're already at that level. So it'd have to be creepier than that. It's just such a ridiculous, cause here's me in this movie. I hit a kid and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I roll him to the side. I put him in the corner. I'm like, see ya, Thomas. There's no sequel.
Sorry.
Right.
That's what I said to Nicole. I'm like, you look around. There's nobody around for miles. Hey, someone slit his throat. It's not really your fault.
Yeah, he's already dead.
Let's just get out of here.
Right. Here's what I do. I roll down the window. I go, I saw nothing. And then I put it in drive and we're off to California, baby. And that's it for me. I mean, you know, I might drive and like maybe you find the mile marker, you know, or you're like, I'm by, you know, you just call and you're like, you know, that spot that's by all the corn. Well, there's a kid in the ditch. You might want to go check it out.
Someone else slit his throat. It wasn't me.
It wasn't me, the doctor.
It wasn't me. I didn't slit his throat. I just hit him with the car. But
he was already dead. He was walking dead at that point.
Right. I know about blood coagulation, and this kid was already dead.
That is one thing because I have not watched this movie since I was a kid. It really did creep the crap out of me. I didn't want to watch it. I hate the music. But I will say that I feel like a big boy now that I've watched it. Because after we were done, you know, Nicole came upstairs and I put the dogs out, made them go to the bathroom. I turned off all the lights. I did not run up the stairs and call her name. So I feel like I feel like
good
a big boy
because
now.
Next week we're doing Children of the Corn 2.
Oh no.
Which was the, sequel, the first sequel. Which was followed by Children of the Corn 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then the remakes. Now, I have seen Children of the Corn 2, which I don't think had any of the returning people.
I don't know. Nicole, did you watch any?
I have seen it, but I cannot remember it.
Yeah. You know what? I know that I've seen 1, 2, and 3 because I know, well, what happens in 2 basically is the nearby town that's mentioned in this movie. They're like, oh, that was terrible and we should adopt these children. And so they go to the next town and I'll give you three guesses what happens. It ain't a birthday party. Let's just say that. And then on the third one, it's like the exact same thing, but, they go to Chicago for some, it's like two of the kids, they get moved to Chicago. And, I did read that 1, 2, and 3 were all released in theaters and then 4, 5, 6, and 7 were all, direct-to-video releases. But then there was a remake that did I know Sean didn't watch it. Nicole, did you see the sci-fi remake?
I didn't see the remake, but I did look it up online, and I actually want to watch it now.
Yeah?
Because it seems to follow the Stephen King story a lot better than this movie did.
That's cool. And you know, I don't know what you think in general about remakes like that. Like, I was really worried about the, remember they did the Shining a couple of years ago? They remade it or whatever. And, you know, you're so used to the original. It's hard seeing other actors in the role. Not that I was really attached to the actors in this, you know, but, I don't know. And, you know, in 84, you probably couldn't put out a horror film with people getting stabbed in the eye with corn husks where now you could just show it on cable, you know?
That's true.
I would actually watch that one. I did, good. You know, because I want to read the short story or let's get the audiobook or something because it did seem kind of interesting. And I'm generally, as far as movies from like the 80s when we were kids, I am not a fan of remakes at all. But I don't have like a, other than, oh, it scared the crap out of me as a kid, I don't have like that nostalgia for the film. So I don't mm-hmm. care if it's remade. And I'd like to see it because like if Nicole had told me that they, you know, kind of follow the short story more. So that makes me want it because I thought there was right. some good parts to the short story from what I read.
I don't know if the movie as a whole, but on the ending, they did follow it where the main characters get killed.
Nice. Good. Good. That's what they get for wandering around in people's houses. Yes.
Yes.
Right. He who trespasses in people's houses.
Gets corn silk in the eyes.
Well, so we know the ending of the, we said the ending of the book and we kind of said, yeah, they do survive and walk off into, happiness after this. But, when he does leave her at the house and then Malachi and some kids start, they come there and they take her, they want to sacrifice her. But Isaac, the leader who Malachi is getting a little fed up with, right?
It's a little power struggle.
Yeah, a little power struggle. And I think he's like, look, man, this is a short dude who talks like a girl and he's telling me what to do. I'm not taking right. it anymore because
and I was in Back to the Future. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, so they take Vicky to the cornfield. Isaac wants to wait for him, right? To sacrifice them both.
Isaac puts her up on the thing and Malachi wants to use her as bait.
Right. He wants to take her down, use her as bait in the town. And Isaac's like, no. And then that's the point where Malachi's just like, you know what? Screw you. We're going to put you up there. And, they do take her down. They put Isaac up there. All the kids kind of follow Malachi, right? And then they take her into town. And it was funny. Again, Nicole's like, what the heck? Because, you know, he's calling for the Outlander or whatever, to come out. And he's like, what do you say?
It's like, Outlander, we have your woman. And then he cuts her face. He cuts her face and she screams, ah! And then he covers her mouth so you can't hear her scream. Wouldn't you leave her mouth open so that it would entice the guy to come save his woman?
Right. That seems like it was the whole purpose, come out. So yeah.
By the way, I've been calling everybody at my work Outlander for the last 2 days.
Yeah, we did it all last night, or yeah. I think maybe I did more so than yeah. she did, but,
right. I'm like, where are my reports, Outlander? And then they're like, what? What are you talking about?
So why would you cut her cheek? And she's screaming, so he's going to hear it, but then you muffle her mouth. Like, that made really no sense at all.
You know what it is? I think the guy just likes hearing his own voice. Have you noticed he talks a ton through the whole movie? He's always barking commands, and he just likes to hear his own voice.
Yeah.
And it takes away from him.
Yeah, and he is. He's always kind of yelling.
You're talking about Malachi? Yeah, because Isaac is creepy just by standing there, you know what I mean? But Malachi has the, you know, the physical presence. I mean, he's one of the biggest of all the kids. But he's not the strong and silent type. Let's just say that.
Yeah, right. He does end up getting out to the cornfield, right? Where she's at.
Right. Now, at this point in the movie, You still don't know that there's anything necessarily supernatural going on.
Well, you kind of do just because.
Do you?
I mean, yeah, like
the corn parts itself.
Yeah, the corn parts.
Yeah, up until this last part, you know what I'm saying? Because
you don't have the evidence of the ground right. rolling.
Really? Oh, you just think it's crazy kids. Yes. Yeah.
Suspicions, corn parting and whispering.
Well, corn parting, whispering. You have the, like at the old man's gas station, the clouds roll in just like out of nowhere and the wind starts blowing, which I honestly would have liked it better without an actual supernatural, being there. Just a bunch of kids who are kind of twisted and following each other. I would have preferred that because we do, like you said, you actually see a physical presence in the form of the ground rolling and stuff like that in the cornfield, like something, what'd you say? Tremors? It looked like tremors, Nicole.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Tremors.
Absolutely.
There's a big worm comes out and eats everyone.
Yeah. So,
and that would have been funny.
The, when we do eventually see, he who walks behind the rose, we get treated to some 1984 special effects.
Oh, so bad.
Right. When they gets attacked by Auto Man or whatever. I don't even know what it is. It's like a sparkly blob of doom.
sparkly cloud thing.
Yeah.
Well, we gotta be a little less harsh on it. I mean, the movie cost what, $800,000 to make?
I did read that, yeah, and it grossed like $14.5 million, which is why there's 19 sequels to it or whatever. But
isn't that what some movies? That's their budget, like 14.
Oh gosh, yeah, now, yeah, that's a cheap. I mean, that's a cheap movie.
Yeah, so they're just probably like, oh, okay, get your Atari out. Can you make some graphics here?
Yeah. So we do see the quote unquote monster at the end, and then how do they? They meet back up with the kids, and Bert is hiding. And then how do they defeat the monster?
Fire.
Yeah, distillery or something like that, right? In the barn. So they hook it up into the irrigation system. They kind of figure out because what is this? Job just happens to have a little note in his pocket that
it's a page from the Bible.
Yes, yeah. That the sheriff, or was it the sheriff? The man in blue, the sheriff, of the town originally had figured out how to defeat him, but then he got killed. So they figure they have to burn the cornfield down. But this was this before or after Bert gives this little speech? I think that happened. I think this happens before. He gives a little speech to all the kids about basically you're being brainwashed, and they all kind of.
Oh, that's in the church when the boy's going to kill.
No. He does that. There's a little confrontation prior to him getting stabbed in the church, but at the end, he's in the cornfield where he has a little scuffle with Malachi, and then all the kids, and he's like, "What are you doing? You know, religion is supposed to be about goodness or something like that." And the kids just kind of look like, "Oh,
right,
he's right." What are we doing? Like, that's all it took.
They're pretty easily, well, they're obviously easily swayed one way, and now they're swayed back the other. I always like when there's a, you know, it's a very movie trope where you give the big speech and then all the bad guys are like, oh crap, you're right. We're bad guys. Why are we doing this? We should stop, you know, which wouldn't it be great if that happened in real life. Like somebody's robbing a liquor store or something. And then you're like, you know, that's against the law. And they're like, oh, you're right, man. And then. It's just over, you know.
Yeah, they just pay him here,
right? Yeah, and then all of a sudden the kids stop the stabbing. And you know, so their whole plan is they're gonna burn down the cornfield, and so you're right. They hook up. I guess they've been making corn fuel, like biofuel or whatever, from the corn. They hook it up to this ear. It's a whole thing, and then they're like, "I need this adapter or whatever." Which that happens to me every day at work. I'm trying to find some adapter, you know, to plug something in. So I did feel for the characters at this point. the one thing I kept thinking during this is, you know, at any given time, like especially during the spring, if there's been a drought or whatever, like 1/4 of Oklahoma is on fire. Like every time somebody throws a cigarette out their window or something, like giant fields will burn down. There's always some huge fire. So I thought this is amazingly difficult to burn cornfield. I mean, at one point he makes a Molotov cocktail and throws it out there and it doesn't burn. I'm like, this is pretty resilient corn, because I'm pretty sure you drop a match anywhere in there and it would burn half of Nebraska.
Well, that was the whole thing though, because there was a drought. I think it even says a drought on the church board outside about how there was a drought when the parents are still alive, because they're coming out of church in the beginning, that there is a drought and everything. And again, reference to the book that this is like, I think it's like they almost say, and again, I didn't read it, but that it was like just perfect corn. Everything was just perfect, right? Or something like that. I have to read it again, but maybe that's why. And plus you have he who walks. Oh God, I hate saying this whole name. He who walks behind a row. You know, I'm sure he has part of it not being able to go up in flames so quickly.
Yeah. You have to just let it go at some point. I know, you know, there was a few things in this, like from a big picture standpoint, that you just have to let go. The one that bothered me the whole time is like, my grandmother she just turned 85 years old. And if nobody has heard from her in 4 hours, people are at her house. I mean, there are so many people calling her. She has nurses come to her house once a day. And can you imagine an entire town of people just disappearing and people like, whatever happened to Uncle Ralph? Or like, I don't know. We went out there and the whole town was gone and every phone line was cut. Huh? They must have went on a cruise. and not told anybody. The whole town just decided to leave. I mean, I thought there's an amazingly lack of investigation into this disappearance of people. Because aren't we supposed to, I mean, isn't there a passing of time between when that happens and
3 years.
Yeah, 3 years. So it's like,
but
hey,
does anybody say that in the movie?
It says 3 years, yeah.
It does in the movie?
Yeah, I don't, it does.
All right.
Maybe they were all inbred, and so they were all related, and that's why nobody cared because they had just, you know, there was no outside relative.
That very well could be. I mean, they were so easily swayed one way or the other. You just say one word, and they're like, oh, yeah.
It's just a phone book, and every last name is Jones.
Because the aunt and uncles, they couldn't have come to town because they would have been killed, but maybe they would call and they're like, it's still busy. It's been three years.
For 3 years,
home.
You know.
They're just talking again.
This is before that call waiting.
What's three-way party calling? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But so yeah, eventually there's some fire and brimstone and going on.
You can't leave out the fact that Isaac is killed by he who walks behind the row, kills Isaac. And that's when we see our first like 80s, you know, special effects come in. But then he comes back to what I thought was like a imitation of like a Beetlejuice, although Beetlejuice hasn't been out yet. maybe Beetlejuice was inspired by Isaac. He's got like the frosted hair and it's all over the place. And he's like,
and he's smoking.
Yeah. I mean, can you see like Beetlejuice in that character a little bit?
Oh yeah.
And
it's hard to take it serious.
Malachi. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So he comes back and he basically snaps. I think he snaps Malachi's neck, right?
He's like an extra from Thriller. Yes.
Yeah. And so then it goes from there that the cornfield is, you know, taken care of with flames. They burn it down. And then like at the end, before the movie actually ends, they're getting into their car and, you know, Nicole mentioned that there's a part in the church, that Burke goes into, which is basically like all the kids worshiping. And there's a part that I'll talk about in a second with that. But there's a girl in there who, maybe she's like a priestess or something. I don't know.
Her name is Ruth.
Ruth. Okay. Where she stabs Burke. Well, then she's in the hiding in the car and she's like going to try and kill Bert again. And, Vicky slammed, like as she's coming after Bert to get out of the car, she slams, I think, the passenger door and knocks her out. And Bert's like, oh, she's out cold. What are we going to do? What do you mean? What are you going to do?
Like this, put her in the trunk with the other kid.
Exactly. Like he's like all concerned. Like, oh no, they just been through all this. They just burned in a cornfield. They've killed kids. And now he's like, oh, what are we going to do? She's out cold. Like, dude,
she just tried to kill me. Oh no, she's out cold.
Right. Eventually they're going to need a bigger trunk. Keep putting kids in it.
And that's pretty much the end of the movie. And they're going to leave with the two little kids. Which I think I would just leave them suckers behind.
I mean, you're just dragging trouble with you at that point.
Yeah. I mean, because Sarah and Job, they're not followers of Isaac, but come on, man. They're going to be.
They're still children.
They're damaged
the
goods.
Right. And what do you do when you get to another town? They're like, who are these kids? I don't know.
You know what? You put them in the trunk with Joseph and Ruth. And then when you get to the next town, you go, look, there's a house on 123 Cranberry Lane. There's a car. There's a Monte Carlo 1980. Just go in the trunk. You're going to find two deads and maybe two children still alive. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. The, you know, I'm trying to think. I think Friday the 13th, the original Friday the 13th was, infamous for that last scene where Jason jumps out of the water, you know, that last scare where you think everything's okay. And then pretty much every horror movie between then and I don't know, for the next 5, 6, 7 years, maybe more, had to do it, you know. And so the girl jumping out of the backseat of the car, on so many levels, is so dumb, but it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Because it's just meant to get a scare out of you. But it's like they've just burned down the field. And so this girl is obviously, I mean, if they're doing a ceremony, she's involved in it. And so now she's like, I'm going to run and get in the back seat of the car in case they come here. I mean, it's so goofy. But yeah, I did love that whole thing where he's like, yeah, what should we do about her? Well, I would put her head under the front wheel and put it in reverse. Right. She Who Leaves a Tire Track. And I mean, it's ridiculous, you know, and was it, how far was the other town? Like 19 miles or something?
Yeah. 19 miles.
Right. So they're like, all right, Job, hope you got your walking shoes on.
Was the car inoperable at that point, or was it just because they knocked a girl out and they didn't want to have to drag her out?
Right. They got two dead miners in the car, which, it's going to be a problem anyway. And yeah, the other, I don't even know what this is what I thought at the end. I go, okay, they're going to walk to that town. And like at the beginning of this movie, they couldn't drive to the other town. So
that's true. So right. Now they're going to walk there. How are they going to find it?
Right. They're just going to, we'll follow the road signs. Well, it didn't help you last time.
Well, they do have the little kids to guide them. Maybe that is.
Those little kids have never left.
Yeah, down. That's true. They're just going to keep walking in circles then, I guess.
Right. All they're going to do is look around corners and go, all right, it's clear.
Yeah. They should just stay. I mean, they have pick of any house they want. The kids are all good now, right? They've all seen the way. Bert convinced them that they were.
Bert gave them the speech. Sure.
Wrongdoers.
You know, here right? You do.
They start their own little, commune.
Yeah, Bert. Basically, Bert could be, the new leader of the town, actually, because they listen to him.
He moves into City Hall. Vicky reopens the diner. I mean, I think they got a good thing going on there, you know, open a schoolhouse. Right. Yeah, but no. Instead, they got to go on a hike.
It could be like Alice. He could be Mel's diner right there. He could just bark orders with his little Siemens knit hat on.
Right, right. Then they come in, and they're like, I want to order something. Well, kiss my corn. Yeah. Have a little catchphrase there. I'd watch that show.
Yeah, I would too.
Make a sitcom out of that. You know, every show that we go on, I like to talk about collectibles from the movie. And
what did you find for this?
I found lots of copies of this movie on VHS, DVD, and Blu-ray.
that's it, right?
Yeah. There are posters, and if you search hard enough, you might find a fan-made T-shirt or whatever. Yeah. There's a whole lot of nothing for this. There are, in fact, this movie is what it is. I mean, I don't know, and I'd like to hear you guys' opinion to see if you think it stands the test of time. But I found a two DVD box set, but they managed to get three movies on each one. But on eBay right now, you can get Children of the Corn 2 through 7 in a box set for $4.
Really?
So yeah, it's not something that's really and one thing is I think the prices of the DVDs have dropped since most of them have come out on Blu-ray. But yeah, it's just not something that brings in a lot of money. And not that, like when you watch Back to the Future, you'd say, oh, well, you could market a hoverboard or you could market, this hat or whatever. I mean, Children of the Corn is really a movie about children killing adults. So there's only so many toy merchandise angles you have on that, you know?
So would you consider this movie then? I mean, because let's be honest. I mean, the acting isn't the greatest acting. The production, again, I want to get into a couple scenes, but would you just consider it basically? It's like a cult film. Is this something you would see one of our previous guests, Sean Robert? Maybe they would cover something like this. Do you think it's a cult film or no?
Well, when I think of the words cult film, I think it's like. It's bigger than the actual movie. You know what I mean? And so in that way, I think it is. I think it is part of that, 80s lexicon of horror films. I mean, when you say Children of the Corn, people, even if they haven't seen the movie, they kind of know what it's about, you know? So, I mean, from that aspect, I think maybe so.
I don't think you can put it into with Friday the 13th, Halloween, and, Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, it's definitely not going to be with those three. But like you said, I think most people know what it is.
Yeah, I looked on, I have bookmarks to the AFI, American Film Institute, because I refer to their list. A lot of times they have like the top 100 comedies, the top 100 greatest films, and they have a list of the top 100 horror films, and this is not on it. So.
Really?
Yeah.
It doesn't make the top 100?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised too. Cause, you know,
but does that include from this time, 70s all the way present?
A history of film. So, Now, one thing, talk about is you mentioned a couple times during the show, you kept saying that when you saw this as a kid, you know, that it scared you or whatever. Do you remember the first time you saw this film?
I know I saw it with my brother and I believe his girlfriend at the time, because they would, my brother's always, like Nicole, he would always watch horror films, but unlike Nicole, who is much tougher than my brother, he used to turn into a total bitch at night and be so scared. And I would always say to him, like, even as a kid, like, Scott, why do you watch these movies that make you get so scared at night? But they would always rent horror flicks, back, you know, when you'd go to the video store that was right on the corner, you know, and get the VHS. And I remember watching it, and I think Isaac and the music are what really freaked me out.
Nicole, do you remember seeing this as a kid or anything?
No, I don't remember. I always knew I saw it, but I don't remember when I saw it. But I saw so many horror movies as a kid that it just kind of blends in with the rest of them.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, I lived in the country, so I was surrounded by cornfields. it was kind of creepy. I do remember.
Say, does
actually,
that make
we
it
used
more
to walk.
Scary?
It did. We used to walk, like, I would walk my one friend home and it was all cornfields the whole way. And, then I would have to walk back myself, and it was about like a mile and a half. And you know, it's the country, so there's no streetlights or anything. Mm-hmm. You just have random houses here and there. And I remember one night walking her back, I heard this noise coming out of the cornfield. It sounded like a baby thing.
Oh my gosh.
And I started to panic, but it wasn't because of Children of the Corn. It was because of a book I had read about fairies, and they said this one fairy would pretend to sound like an infant crying or her animal, so you would go and then it would eat you.
Oh,
and
geez.
Yeah, so then I hurried home the rest of the way.
You know, if I'd have been you and I would have had a lighter, I would have lit the cornfield on fire. I would have been like, take that, HWWBTR. I would have run. I tell you what, I wasn't that fat of a kid, but I was fatter than every other kid, if that makes sense. Like, I was like, had this little pot belly, you know, but I'm telling you what, I have never run faster than if I'm in the dark and I think something's behind me or whatever, then all of a sudden I'm like a freaking track star. My feet, like, I'm almost kicking myself in the butt because my feet are going so fast. I think I told this story. I don't think I told it here, but, I had this experience one time. These neighborhood kids, and my next door neighbors, like, we had a half acre, and then there was a half acre lot that was empty. And then, my neighbor's house, they had a half acre. And so there's this big giant lot. And so one time, the neighborhood kids called me and they said, hey, we're going to play penny poker if you want to come over. And I said, okay. And it's like 10 o'clock at night or something, I mean, like a Friday night. And so I go over there. And so this is all a big setup because the guy's older brother was dressed as a ninja and was laying flat. And it's just like what you said. I mean, I lived outside of the city, so there's no, you know, lights. I mean, it's just a pitch black field. And I start, you know, I'm walking over there and I could see all these kids outside. Of course, they're standing out there because they're going to watch me start screaming here in a minute. And I go and he jumped up. And because it was so dark, it seemed like he came out of the ground. I mean, he just like shot up in front of me. I ran so, like, I lost a shoe. You ever run so fast, your shoe comes off and I was running. And he finally caught me. He's like, it's me, you know? And I was like, I don't care who it is. Like, I was still running so fast. I just remember, you know, and so, like, when I get, you know, like, outside, I don't know if it's because of that experience or whatever, but when I get outside and it's pitch black, I start like looking over my shoulder and like, I'm going to get attacked by a ninja, you know, but, but I will. And man, if I heard like an infant baby, first thing I'm doing, well, I don't know if I would run first or set the field on fire. Maybe I would just set the fire.
Well,
first.
I didn't have a lighter.
Oh.
So, you know, I was underage. I was young. I didn't have a lighter. I was probably like 12. So, and it could have been like a kitten or, I don't know, it was some sort of strange cry.
I would have run.
Freaked me out.
I would have run so fast. And then every time when my friends, I would not walk them home again. I'd be like, you guys are, y'all are on your own.
Well, we started doing walk halfway.
So you have to
after that, yeah, right. I would just walk her to the corner. So it was only like a half mile instead of like a mile and a half. And she'd have to walk the rest of the way by herself.
Oh, how funny. I had a friend that invited me over. I'd met him in school and he invited me over. And I watched the first horror movie. I think it was like right before I saw Children of the Corn. I saw Nightmare on Elm Street. And I was spending the night at a friend's house because I had watched some stuff. My parents had a satellite, you know, so I would watch movies, but not that they would know. You know what I mean? Like, so a lot of times I didn't see the whole movie. Like, I would just see scenes or something like that. So I'd gone over to this kid's house to spend the night, and he had Showtime. I didn't have Showtime. And so it was like a two-part movie night thing or whatever. And so we sat on the couch. And we watched Children of the Corn. And I definitely remember watching it that night. And then right after that was Porky's. So we went, it was like a double feature. We watched both those movies. But I wasn't leaving the house. I didn't go walk in a cornfield that night. I was all curled up on a hide a bed somewhere. I wasn't going outside.
I think you might have told that story in your ninja episode
Yeah.
Yeah, which I'm going to tell you right now, if you've not heard Rob's You Don't Know Flack episode on ninjas, that's probably one of my favorite episodes. I love that because I think that was the first time the episode after that was the first time I ever sent it in like a voice message because Rob was at a park and telling stories about ninjas and ninja movies. And he's at a park. It's raining and there's like a couple having sex in a car a little bit down. There's cars pulling up and I'm thinking at any point, like the police are going to come because they're going to think he's some pervert in a car. But I think you may have told that story
on that episode. Yeah. That was definitely an interesting park.
Yeah. That was funny.
So I want to know from our resident horror expert, number one, how do you think this rates, compared to other 80s horror movies? And then an overall kind of rating, like, do you recommend it? Do you not recommend it? What do you think of it?
I recommend it because it's a classic. You should just watch it because it's a classic. But overall, it's not one of my favorites. Nightmare on Elm Street, that's a good one. Children of the Corn. I don't know. It wasn't very convincing. Not that Nightmare on Elm Street is convincing, but it's a little more convincing than Children of the Corn.
Well, I agree with you. I think Nightmare on Elm Street, I think the kids in general act like how kids would act. You know, I mean, they tell the adults and then the adults don't believe them, which, you know, is understandable. And they try to do things to try and stay awake. And so those are things that make sense. And in this one, the characters just act so abnormal. I mean, like we talked
old
about.
Old fashioned. Right. They're like really, I mean, it's still 1984. It wasn't supposed to be before then, right?
And Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, that can happen anywhere. The premise of that story, where this is like, all right, so unless you're driving through the country through a cornfield, you really don't have to worry about it because that's not going to happen. Something like that in a big town, I guess.
Or corn could just pop up.
And yeah, I guess he who walks behind the rose could happen anywhere. But I guess it comes back to, Rob, like you said, if you haven't watched it, if you grew up in the 80s or whether you're a kid or a teenager in the 80s, if you haven't watched it, you probably heard of the movie. I would say, I mean, it's on Netflix. I would say watch it. It was a good watch. I mean, like a lot of 80s flicks, you know, the acting isn't always top notch, right? But I would say watch it.
I think you should watch it if for no other reason than for the next week you'll walk around calling all your friends outlanders. That's not seriously the thing I took away from it the most.
What was the other thing that Ruth said something, not outlander, but crap, I can't think of it, but I kept saying that too.
I know, it's not infidel. It was something like that though.
Oh, you looked it up.
I did
too.
Look it up. What the heck was it? I can't remember, but it was basically like if someone comes to a group and doesn't.
Like an infiltrator or something like that. I can't remember.
Oh, gosh. I'm going to play that part right now when I remember what it was. But Anyways, I'm glad we watched it. I'm glad I watched it. Like I said, I feel like I've accomplished something. I think I've grown as a person. No, I'm just kidding. But did we watch this once before or no?
I think so. You know, it was definitely like creepier when I was a kid. Mm. As an adult watching it, it's hard not to sort of pick it apart.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we do that with this show anyways. And I think we do it. Well, I don't think we do. We do it in a fun kind of way. I mean, a lot of the movies we watch, I'm sure most people would say like, yeah, the acting was kind of over the top in a sense. No, not like, you know, 40s movies or something, but, you know, we do it in all fun. I mean, that's why we do this show, is just to have fun, watch these movies again and see if they do, you know, hit us the same way that they did, when we were kids. Some of them do, Cloak and Dagger for one, you know, in some movies, maybe not so much. I did enjoy it. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, and I agree with you. I enjoyed it too, especially from that nostalgic point of view, but I did not find it nearly as scary as I did as a kid. And I think, you know, I just had a conversation recently with someone about how, I don't know if you guys, rode the bus to school. I was a bus rider, so I rode the bus, and I remember always being intimidated by the big kids, you know, that would sit in the back of the bus. But now when I think about it, I'm like, okay, how big could they have been if they're riding the bus? You know, I mean, if they were big kids, they would have been driving a car or something. So, you know, it's all relative, you know, and I think when you're a little kid, if you see this movie, obviously, you know, Isaac and Malachi, they're scary because they're a little bit older than you and they're bigger than you and they have access to a meat slicer. But when you're an adult, I just think, I mean, you know, maybe not Malachi, but I think any other kid in this movie, I think, and maybe not all of them at once, but one on one, I felt like most of the children in this movie, I could kick their ass. Now, I'm not saying that two or three at a time, because they'll get on you, you know, and they'll still start climbing on you. But I mean, like a 12-year-old girl, she brings me a scary drawing, I'll knock her out. I will fight. I am the undisputed child beater upper.
No questions asked. You're like, children of the corn, bash.
Right. I show up to a town. All the adults are gone. Creepy kids. And you know, the thing is, I'll probably get confused. I'm probably actually at like Jump Zone or someplace where people drop their kids off, but I'm not taking chances. I mean, and I've had corn on the cob and I've got it on the mind. I've had some candy corn or something like that. And then, I'm just going to start taking kids out. You know, I'm like, he who talks to the fist. And then I just start going wild on the kids. But I don't know. I don't know. As an adult, you just look at these people, you know, and it's that trope that we talked about of when you act so foolishly in a horror movie, then you probably deserve to be killed. I mean, there's so many things that Bert and Vicky could have done.
Yeah. Oh, and unfortunately, they were not killed.
Yeah, it unfortunately is right.
if you are at a festival or something and you see kids eating corn or whatever and they start calling you the interloper.
Interloper.
Oh, that's it. That's it. Yes.
that maybe you need to head for, right,
then
head
they
for the
did
hills.
All chant, kill, kill, kill.
You know
kill,
what?
Remember?
Actually,
that was creepy.
It was creepy, but if you, and I'd like to watch that scene again. If you watch it, I almost think some of those younger kids, they weren't even saying it. They were just kind of mouthing something other than that. Like their parents maybe were like, you know what? They can be in the scene, but I don't want them
saying
chanting.
They can't say kill. They have to say, bear.
Yeah. Bear, bear, right. Bear, bear,
bear, bear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And Sean, I'm with you. I think when you said like the NOM flashbacks, you know, people, and I really only know about this from movies, but people have their triggers or whatever. The next time I'm at the fair, you're right. Some kid gets off the tilt-a-whirl and I think that they've said interloper. I'm kicking their ass.
Sir.
I'm not taking chances.
Sir, would you like a corn dog? Interloper! Get him!
Right. My luck is there'll be a big ride called the Outlander. Ride the Outlander, and I just start whooping kids' asses.
Yeah. Come on over and play the interloper game. You get three darts.
Yeah, don't take any chances.
Yeah. No, this was a fun movie to rewatch. It was I had a good time with this one. Nicole, I know it wasn't your top choice. You wanted to do the Beastmaster, I think.
I loved the movie Beastmaster.
And you know what? I really did like Beastmaster, but I've talked about it before on this show that a lot of the, cause I really don't watch a lot of TV at home, right? A lot of like the movies for this, I'll watch at work over the course of a couple of days on my break. I don't go in the break room. I have my own little area. I have a netbook and I watch the movies, and I started watching Beastmaster a couple of weeks ago. And there's just too many damn guys in loincloths that.
There's also naked ladies.
Well,
in it.
I didn't get that far because all I can think of is there's somebody standing, my boss or somebody standing behind me watching these two guys in loincloths. So I was like, you know what? We're going to do Children of the Corn. And, I'm glad we did. I really had a good time with this one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was fun.
And thanks for coming on with us, Nicole. I know it was last minute.
You're welcome.
We'll have to get you on again. It was
yeah,
fun.
She's
for Beastmaster. For Beastmaster.
For Beastmaster, all right. Anyways, Nicole, thanks for coming on. Why don't you give us your plug for your website or your Etsy's or stuff like that?
If you like spooky, you can find Spooky Little Critters at www.mealymonsterland.com.
And there's links there, right, to your store, your Etsy shop?
There sure are.
So check that out. And Rob, how about you? Any parting words?
I don't think so. I'm really all I'm thinking about now is beating up children. my new thing. No, I think I had fun on this one, and we definitely have to get Nicole to pick another horror movie for us to do in a couple months.
Well, she likes other movies because I'm not gonna make this a habit.
Why not?
I don't like right. it. She goes to the video store. Now she comes home with like a stack of five or six. I think you've probably watched every horror movie on Netflix, right?
No.
Almost?
No.
Three quarters?
There's some that just don't look like they're worth watching.
She's watched a lot.
I have watched a lot, though.
And I've watched quite a few newer ones. I'll say I'm not going to watch them, and I'll come up here on the computer, and then I walk through, and then I end up getting stuck and watching the endings of them. But
do you ever worry about showing up on a like some kind of FBI list or whatever, because my Netflix queue is all horror movies and then children's movies that my kids watch. And I think there's some, if anybody looks at my thing, you know, they're looking at like, you know, the Axe Slinger 7 and then, you know,
SpongeBob.
Exactly. Like this guy, we need to keep an eye on this guy right here.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap up this week's episode. Thanks again, Nicole, for coming on. And Rob, as usual, it was fun. You know, I haven't mentioned this in a while, but if anybody wants to help support Throwback Reviews or the Throwback Network, there's a simple way you can do it. If you shop Amazon, instead of going to Amazon.com, just go head on over to throwbackreviews.com/Amazon. And that will be our affiliate link, or you can just go to throwbackreviews.com or throwbacknetwork.net, and there are links to our affiliate. You go to Amazon, you shop like normal, it doesn't cost you any more, and Amazon gives us a little kickback for sending people their way. So if you want to help us out, that would be great. Also, iTunes reviews, love those. We'd like to get some more of those in, and as usual, thanks to Peachy Pixel 8 for the intro and closing music. And for the album art for this episode is done by none other than Rob Flack O'Hara. So until next time, thanks for listening.
Woman! She still lives!